Okay, for our new series this week of Shurim, I'm not 100% sure if there'll be two or three, depending on what we're going to be doing this week on Wednesday. But obviously, it being the Shavuos HaBetamos fast day, and we think about mourning Yerushalayim, so of course, we should think about Yerushalayim. It should be on our mind. We should remind ourselves of the great fortune that we were given, specifically in 1967, being given the city of Yerushalayim back, unfortunately not bitfarato, as of course on top of Beis Mikdashenu there's still the ultimate form of Chil Hashem. But what I wanted to discuss is another topic that is quite heated these days, and that is what is going on at the Kotel, a fight for the Kotel itself. As you, I'm sure, have heard in current events, the fact that the WOW, the Women of the Wall, have wanted to, and in a appropriate or not appropriate way, have come to the Kotel, obviously think a not appropriate way, put on tefillin and laning and Rosh Chodesh, the whole thing. And they were granted a number of months ago, probably over a year ago already, an extension of the Kotel. The Kotel is one very large wall that we are davening at a very, very small part of it, and it extends both to the right and to the left. To the right side, Robinson's Arch is still part of the Kotel, and that was given to them, Ki'ilu. And there's a big fight about that. So one central focus question is that what are we fighting over? Is there any kedusha to this? And especially if you understand a little bit of history, which I'm not a historian nor in the business of tour guiding or archaeological findings, but the wall itself, so we know that initially this was called Herald's Wall. It was built in the time of the second Beis HaMikdash in 19 BCE, and there were more that was added later on, smaller stones by the Ottoman Empire. I found it very interesting in two articles that I found in researching this, one in the J Post in May 2015 by Dror Ben-Ami, and he says, why should the Kotel be called holy? Herod was considered to be a madman. He was a malicious person, and he built this wall. How can it be that the Shekhinah would be shayer from this? This person, clearly not religious, saying, why would there be any holiness to this? And in Haaretz in February 2000... What?
What were the motives behind building the wall?
So it's interesting. Herod's motives was actually, at least from what I read, good motives. And that that he did initially agree to the Beis HaMikdash being there and wanted to secure it and wanted to extend the fortress-like nature of it. And as we'll see later on, there is an element of, you know, Kedusha that there will be, even though the Kotel wall will now be, we'll see, almost nobody says that this is actually part of the Beis HaMikdash, but it was extended, and the Kedusha potentially was extended. In Haaretz, in February 2016, somebody by the name of Pfeffer, I believe, so he said, that this is clearly not part of the Kotel. It's not part of the Kotel walls. And again, along similar lines, why are we making such a big deal of it? And in fact, the wall that they were talking about, as we'll see in a moment, was the Ottoman wall, which was destroyed. Okay. So these two people obviously don't understand the importance and the kedusha of it. One could argue that even if, at the end of the day, you were to say that there is no level of kedusha, if you were to say that, a person has to be very careful when he discusses the inyan of the Kotel, in that we know midore doros, the Kotel was a place that was used for tefillah. There's a story told in the Or HaChaim. The Or HaChaim was told, the Or HaChaim lived in Yerushalayim, and the famous story about his kever, that wasn't one of the few kvarim that weren't plowed over. He's told about the Arab who tried to plow it over and many times got his plow stuck and then it broke. The Or Chaim HaKadosh told someone to who was having medical issues to go to the Kotel and put a note in the Kotel. This is something we'll discuss in our future discussions this week about putting notes in the Kotel, putting your fingers in the Kotel, leaning on the Kotel, getting Hana from it. First, we have to understand what it is, the Kotel. And he writes in his introduction that he told this guy to go to the Kotel HaMaravi. So if in fact this is true, we have a quite early source that there was such thing as a Kotel. So you have to be very careful no matter what you're going to say. The fact that Jews have been davening there, these other articles, kind of, that that's not historically true, nobody really ever davened there. So it's not, that's certainly not true either. The first source is from Shmos Rabbah, and it says, Mishachar Beis HaMikdash Nistalka Shechina L'Shamayim Shenemar Hashem B'Shamayim Hichin Kiso. Kind of the discussion that we had this morning, the fact is that with the Beis HaMikdash leaving us, we left an important piece of the Shechina being Shoyer in this world. Even though we can say that the Shechina is Shoyer in Dalet Almas Shalalacha and in our shuls, it's not the same level that we used to have. And there's tremendous Chil Hashem in that. That's one of the things that we want to rebuild. Rabbi Elazar says, no. Lo zaza Shechina mitoch Eicha. Amar Rabbi Achan, the underlying part, La'olam ein Shechina zaza mikolta Amar Rabbi. Shenemar hinei ze oimeit achar kotleinu. This is something that we actually say in the keynotes of Tisha B'Av, that Li'olam ein Shechina zaza mikolta Amar Rabbi. This is a startling statement, because historically, how did the Shmos Rabbah know, and this is of course from Shir Shir Rabbah as well, that there would never ever be a time where the Kotel wouldn't be destroyed? Now, we have to assume, just because it's called the Kotel Meravi, is it talking about our Kotel Meravi? That's questionable. But this line is quite well quoted and very, very interesting. And the pasuk in Shir Shir, Hine Zeh Oymed Acher Kotleinu, which is again used in the keynotes to remind us of, if you will, a bit of nechama, that Hashem left us some sort of remembrance. Hine zeh oymed, source number two, Shir Shirim Rabbah. Oymed achar kotleinu, achar kotel amaravi shel Beit HaMikdash. So the beautiful part of this is these midrashim. The beautiful part is when we sit and we talk about it, every rabbi likes to be doirish about it. The problem is it's not an accurate statement, in that it's true that the Western Wall is intact, but it's also true that the Southern Wall is also intact. So if you've ever gone on a tour of the wall excavation, so they'll show you that it's true that a lot of it has been destroyed, but that there's Southern Wall excavation. It's the Southern Wall, the same type of thing. Why it doesn't have the same Kedusha, that might be a different shir on itself. But as much as these Midrashim are beautiful and remind us that the Kotel Meravi will never be Zaz, it's not particularly true that it's only the Western Wall. Just be aware of that. So let's start our discussion understanding what is the Kotel HaMeravi. We start with the Sheilos HaTshuvos of the Radbaz, very important in understanding, again, what is the Kotel HaMeravi. Rav David Ben Zimri, the Rav of Chief Rabbi of Egypt, 1517, was in Spain, Sfat, later on. We quoted the Radbaz last Sunday, his famous tshuva about the person who wanted to move to Sfat. He made a neder, and his parents didn't want him to move. So again, historically, you need to know where he lived, where he came from. Da, ki adaver barer b'li safek, shetachas hakipa shel misgad amar, which is what? The, what? The Dome of the Rock, right? Sham Eben Ashsia. This is also well disputed. But there is a school of thought that says that it's actually well protected, the Eben Shesia, because it's actually underneath. This is a big question, which we're not at all discussing today, of going on Har HaBayis today. And Rav, for example, Rav Gorin, who wrote a sefer called Har HaBayis and has maps there, and people who go on Har HaBayis, so nobody will ever, ever step foot inside of for maybe for other reasons as well, but that would never be a consideration to go into the dome with a rock, because l'kuli amel lo pligi, there are certain places, even when you go to the mikvah and you wear the rubber shoes and you do all the things, that you can't walk. There are certain places they hold that you can. There are many poskim who disagree and say you can't walk anywhere there. But he believed that the Eben Shasiya is on the bottom, that that helps in understanding measurements of the Kotel, where you could walk. Achar Kotel Merabi shel Beis HaMikdash. So, I'm sorry, I skipped. He says, Asher Aleha, Haya Aron Beis HaMikdash, and Vuchfulo, Shekain, Haya Bein Kotel Merabi, Ha'azara, L'Kotel HaHechel, V'Avu HaKotel, Shekotlam Niktashu. So, what happened over here? We have a Eben Shasiya, we have the mosque which is on it, and then you have obviously hundreds of feet away, or yards, you have this wall which we call the Western Wall today. The question is, what is it? So says the Radbaz, it's the Kotel HaMeravi of the Azara. So, the Chachmas Odom, known as the Chaya Odom and Shari Tzedek, Shari Mishpat, says, Rav Avram Danzig, so he says something beautiful. Kishiyavo Samach Lamakam HaMikdash Ad Shirah Mekomog, when he came to Eretz Yisrael and he saw Az Yishtachva Keneged Makom HaAzara, I went to the Makom of the Azara, i.e., the Kotel Meravi. So now we have two sources that say that the Kotel is part of the Azara of the Beis HaMikdash. Source number five is the Shedel Zetshuvos of the Ridbaz. The Ridbaz, not to be confused with the Radbaz, was a very interesting figure. Rav David Yaakov Orlovsky, the Rav of Sulvak, of Slusk, 1845 to 1913, wrote amazing svarim, one of the most famous on the Yerushalmi. He was called the chief rabbi of Chicago. There is a infamous / apocryphal, but a story nonetheless, which many tell about him, that this part of the story is definitely true. The second part I don't think is true, but could be. He came to Chicago, we're talking about, you know, quite many years ago, and he saw that the one of his jobs there was to work on the hashkachas there, and there was a shchita house, and he saw that they were doing a very bad job at shchita. People were relying on this for kosher chickens, and they weren't kosher, in fact. And he called them out on this, and unfortunately for him, the shchita house was owned by the mafia, and they said, if you start to report this to the Jews, what's going on here, you know, you're going to get it. And there was additional threatening that was done, and so the story is told that he had to leave in the middle of the night on Shabbos. It was a Friday night, and they found out they were going to kill him that night. The story is he definitely left. The question is exactly where. To me, he's more well known for his writings against Rav Kook, specifically on Shemitah. He was so against the Hetah Mechira, and he wrote so much about it. But here, he writes something quite interesting. Now people are coming to Yerushalayim, and they're seeing this new thing, the Kotel Meravi. Harav HaCharif Ubakir Yir Shamayim Mitzuyonim B'Doreinu Harav Yehoshua Yosef B'Toreir B'Dover HaMakom Sha'anu Mitpalim Eitzel Kotom Ravoy Shal Beis HaMikdash Rebuild it with Medato Osir Lano Lado B'Makom Hazeh Ki Kotel Hazeh Hu Kotel HaAzara V'lo Kotel Shal Har HaBayit. Right? If I could just skip. The conventional thinking is that there is a big har. We call it Har HaBayis. Har HaBayis B'Adeinu, the famous line. And then that, you know, had supporting walls. So, if you will, if you look at this, so I have the sheet of paper here. The sheet of paper was the Beit HaMikdash. Okay. Then there was an Azara, which had full Kedusha. And then there was an outer wall that secured the Beit HaMikdash. What secured we call Harabayas. The Azara, the Beit HaMikdash, had Kedusha. But outside of Harabayas, those walls had no Kedusha. The Ridbaz, based on what we saw in the Radbaz, says that if in fact it's true that the Kotel Maravi, the Western Wall as we call it today, is the Har Habayis, part of the Azara, what's going on here? You can't stand there. Doesn't make sense.
Kotel Maravi, what? The other side of it, that would still be a problem.
Yeah. Because what it would mean is that you're standing by the wall of the Azara. You would not be able to touch the wall for sure. But also, that would mean that at some point, somewhere else, there's a wall that surrounds Har HaBayis. You're not allowed to be there. You'll see what he says. V'lo kosel shel Har HaBayis k'mo she'amanu ha'olam. V'kvar k'mu l'zeh haradba zatzal, l'zeh harav hanal chlit, ki rabbeinu haradba z'chacham achrim chokim al zeh, v'yom shehu kotel shel Har HaBayis. It's very strange, right? I'm admitting you do have two very, very important and influential deos that say that it's part of Har, not Har HaBayis, but the Azara. And he writes, I can't be machriya, even though the entire world is, you'll see, that doesn't make any, it's just not historically correct. You have to do, we have in our yeshiva and Leva Torah, we have Rav Citrin, for example, who is a tour guide, and he showed me there are works that have been, this is just archaeological works, it's just not historically factual to say that it's the Azara. Just talking about actual measurements that were recorded. But okay. So he says, I don't want to say what to do here. And therefore he writes, because of the suffix Issa Karis, to be on Har HaBayis when you're not supposed to be, because you're considered to be now on Har HaBayis, I won't go to the Kotel. And this Rav Yehoshua Yosef, Hanal Tzarech Richuk La'amidas Raglayim Erechaf Amah, explains exactly how far you can, you before we started this year, you pointed out, Chaim Kanievsky's Psak, apparently, that you don't actually have to be up to the Kotel. There is a shita that does say that, even if you hold that it's Har HaBayis. If I'm not mistaken, Rav Nevinzel will not go up to the Kotel itself. Moedim Ezmanim is quoted as well, because they believe something that also I have a hard time understanding, but that the Kotel does not extend as a full straight line, like as a wall would normally do. So if we have a wall over here, this is a wall, so this is a wall. So if I'm standing over here, I'm not standing on the wall. Through the history, what happened was with stones, and basically it goes like this. The stones keep jutting out a bit. So really, if you're standing right up against the Kotel, you're actually standing on whatever this wall is called. Now the reason why I have a problem with that is that because, I'm sure you've seen this, if you go inside of the Kotel Plaza, the air-conditioned part, there is that part where you can look and see the actual wall. You can look all the way down, there's a piece of glass. And if you look at that piece of glass, you clearly see that, yes, it's true, it's like a little bit jutting out, but if you're standing up against the Kotel, at least in that line, there's nothing coming out of it. So I'm not really sure what that chumrah is based on. But he says, I'm not sure whether, maybe the Radaz is correct. He says, but I have a little problem. The great rabbis, we're told, stood in this place. Why didn't they have a chashash of this akares? So, near lefias daiti milvachi yesh lanu l'smoch al divrei chazal hanoch lehem liyisrael im ein neviyam hein b'nei neviyam hein milvad zeh afilu she yihye ha'emes ki rabbeinu haradbaz v'rav Yehoshua Yosef. Matirim anachu la'amod l'yitpal v'makam hazeh asher anu omdim v'achshav. So again, what historically the Radbaz was talking about, was it a different wall, is difficult to understand. But just like I said at the start of this year, that no matter what we passed in at the end, there's some sort of holiness here. I'll tell you an interesting story. many years ago, before we made Aliyah, we had a private tour of the. Well, I think I'm wrong. I think we had made Aliyah already. My sister-in-law did make Aliyah, and she was a chashuv rebbetzin in Baltimore, so she had a private tour by one of the people mamish who kept it going, Miriam. I forgot her last name, of Kever Rachel. Miriam Perez. I forgot what her name was. Not Miriam Perez. Somebody else. Tahan. So she is one of the people who fought when Netanyahu decided to give Hebron away and to give away Beis Lechem. So she fought that Kever Rachel should be saved. And it wasn't such a pashut thing. And it was a very conversational item. And almost, we don't have the, almost didn't have Kever Rachel. And she fought in such an amazing way. She went up to the Kotel. It was just a beautiful, beautiful thing in the Knesset, her speech. So she gave us a private tour, and she spoke to us. And she told me the most remarkable story, but I think there's something to this idea. She said that a few weeks ago, now it's like 8 years ago, but a few weeks ago, the Belzer Rebbe came to Davin. So when some of the great Gedolim come, she said, you can't come at normal times, because people will just so balagan. So they schedule appointments to open up Kever Rachel at 2 in the morning and so on and so forth, which, you know, they're just davening mincha then, so it's fine. So I'm kidding, of course. So the Belzer Rebbe was coming, and she was organizing this, and she was going there. So she went to 2 o'clock in the morning. So the whole Chassidim come, it's going to Kever Rachel. This is something they don't do so often. So she said she opens it up, and he starts to go, the Belzer Rebbe, and talk about, you know, a mistake. He walks to the side of the women's side, and he starts davening there. The Hasidim are flipping out, you know, like, I don't think there's anything worse than davening the women's section, you know what I'm saying? Everybody's going crazy. And they don't know what to do, and this one's like, you tell the Rebbe, it's about the Rebbe. So she's standing there in awe, you know, what's going to happen here? This is great. This is good hock. And finally, one of his kabbalim, they say, you got to do it. And they go up to the Rebbe, and they say to him, the women's section, you know, then. And he stops and he turns around and he gives claps. And he says, let me explain something to you. He says, I don't know about the men's section of Kever Rachel, but I can tell you what I know about the women's section. The tears that have been extracted in this place by women for all the yeshuvas that they want, those tefillahs I know for sure will listen to. The men's side, I'm not so sure. I want to daven on this side. Obviously, there are no women there. I want to daven on the side where the tefillahs are makabel. It's beautiful, something to be said for that. So then I said to her, wow. I said, can I go daven in the women's section? No, you can't. But, okay. Only for the bells around. But, so, we shouldn't lose sight. There's the kedusha level to this wall, which Mistoma at the end will say is only really the kotel of Har HaBayis, which inherently does not have kedusha to it. Okay, we'll see in our second shir about Me'ilah, you'll have to lean on it, because it was infused with Kedusha. And if you talk about the times of Herod, so Herod obviously wasn't a Kadosh himself, certainly not Mahavdil, but because it supported what Har HaBayis was in a place that of course we don't walk on today, most people. But there's certainly, you have to say at the end of the day, there's some sort of Kedusha level there. So we've seen now two different shows. If you look at source number 6 on the second side, so there's not much room to argue. The Avnei Nezer, we quoted this morning as well, Sagachavar Egletal, and this is the Shita of the Kaftel of Aferach and the Pasa Shulchan, and Rav Shturbach, the Modim Azmanim, the Ur HaMikdash of Tepachinsky, that it's Barur, there's no question that this is the wall of Har HaBayis. B'davar asher that he was asked by this person, B'davar, and the Kvam shel yesh b'yusod hakotel maravi shel Har HaBayis shel aser labal keri. If you go with the Shita of the Radbaz and the Chachma Sadam, and maybe the Radbaz is Chashash, if you're a Baal Keri, you can't go to the Kotel. A woman's a Nidah, she can't go to the Kotel. He says, Tshuva, Hine yesh livar'er bazeh, is a svekas ha'echad im
over choyma shall harabayis nitkadish, habet im harabayis kiddush rak al gav haritzpa or kiddush al ha tohom. Kamoba Azorichim Bezvachim, Skamar and Zvachim, Skamar and Psachim, talks about the Korban Pesach itself, how exactly you were eat it. Do we consider air, meaning if a person is leaning out, but he's all the way on the top, is that considered to be that you're still in Yerushalayim or not? Psachim, Hachalonot, V'Ovei Choma Kilifnim, what is it really considered anyway? And he says at the end, so he's going to go on a prerequisite of what I wanted to discuss tomorrow about the fingers itself. But he says, first of all, there's no shiloh that this can't physically be the wall of the Azara. But he asked an ultimate and important question. And that is, okay, let's dismiss everything we said until now. This is not the wall of the Azara. So now it's the wall of Harabais. Okay, good. So let me ask you something. There's a famous Shiloh that was asked in 1967. So unfortunately, Litzarenu, there's been many, many rock-throwing attacks on what we certainly call Harabais. Right, they come out Ramadan, they start throwing rocks on people. It's dangerous. So what they decide to do? They have patrols. They have soldiers on the top. So this was a whole question. Should they wear dafka, wear non-leather shoes? Should they go to the mikveh before? It's a very, very beautiful tshuvas that were written right after 1967. But I'll ask you even further. What's that proving? You can't go on Harabayas, right? According to that idea. So now he asks another question. If my hand extends into the wall itself, is that considered to be I'm on Harabayas now? Now, how can your hand extend into a wall? Well, you guys know, right? When you put a note into the kotel, your hand is now half in the wall or partly in the wall. And there are so many nooks and crannies in that wall that potentially, if my hand is in it, it's ki'ilu, like my hand is actually now on Har HaBayis. And if you hold, you can't go into Har HaBayis, you got a problem. So he's makil on this and says the tumah is not yotzei mi'ha'etz, but we'll see in future shiurim the shita of Rosh Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, who also says that there's a heta over here because of the fact that we don't hold that if a person's fingers were in the kotel, or in general, when it comes to tumor, the Gemara in Pesachim that we quoted, that's considered like, he says, the difference is the following. If this was, let's say, over here, past the door was Harabayas, okay, and I opened the door, and I went outside, so now I'm on Harabayas. Everybody agrees, because I was able to open the door. But for some miraculous reason, I can extend my hand into the wall, says Rosh Shlomo Zalman, that's meforish, that's not considered to be. If it's a way that you can't normally extend your hand, not a door or a window, so that's not considered to be. Here the Gemara is talking about chalonot. It's not something that's normally open, therefore it's not usur. And this is the general shita, just number one, just to explain. So the reason why the Radbaz, excuse me for saying, is most probably wrong is because the kotel itself is not close to the measurements, the definition of what Harabayis was. And in Maseches Midos in Perek Beis Aleph, it's Meforish says that Harabayis was 500 al 500 amma. So the Meiri, right there, Beis Bechira, the Rambam says this in Beis Bechira. And the Meiri, so it's obvious that this is, can't be the kotel of the Azara. So we could almost dismiss that. The reason I say almost, obviously, is because of the fact that we have three shitas that we learned that says, you know, we should be nervous about it. Again, I think Rav, you know, the Ritvaz beautifully says, go after what people are doing today. And if people are on this kotel, and they're going to the kotel, there must be a very, very good reason for it. And therefore, I don't, you know, it seems like the chashash is not so high. This is what Topchinsky says as well. We'll see tomorrow a tshuva from Rav Moshe Feinstein, the Tzitzel Yezid, the Abiyah Omer, all are very much convinced that there just was some sort of historical. Some like to say that there actually was a different kotel that the Radbaz was talking about. It's possible. And there was another place that people were going. This could, you know, maybe support those people that go in Harabayas. But this important piece in the Avnei Nezer says not only is it obvious that the kotel is Harabayas, but even if it was Harabayas, extending your fingers would not be considered to be part and parcel of going on to Harabayas. You know, the just one final word about the Avnei Nezer. So Rav Soloveitchik, this is the Rebbe of a Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik said that he must have been a brisker, because his logic is so, so beautiful that it's very, very difficult not to say that. So that is discussion point number one. Let me, if you don't mind, we have a few minutes, so I just want to review some of the ideas that we're going to speak about tomorrow. Rav Avadia Yosef, tomorrow we're going to summarize just the line that he says here in source number 7. Ulam ha'emes yoyre darko sha'kotel ha'meravi shalanu eino kotel ha'azora klal. There's no way you could say it's the kotel ha'meravi klal. Ella chimas harabayas. There's no way you could be part of the Azara, and for this you need the beautiful mind of Rav Avadia Yosef. Avnei Nezer recorded it, says this. And the Radbaz Atzmo says, Beli Safek, Evan Ashasiyahi, Evan Shasiyah, Kipat HaMis God, Hanirim Asleinu, Lotzrich, it had to be something else. He says, Bar Mo'o, that it can't be anything else but Harabais. And he bases this on a Mishnah we'll see in Kalim, that Harabais HaMikdash Mimansha, Ein Zvachim, when he dies, Nechazim Lusham, so it can't be on top of Harabais. So what are we discussing tomorrow? Now I can tell you this now that it's over. So, number one, we'll have a tshuva from Rav Moshe Feinstein asking about souvenirs. Apparently there was an idea to break off pieces of the kotel and bring them back with you to America. Souvenir. They have air of Israel. So this would be a pebble, and you put it on your, you know, bookcase. This is a pebble from so if it's Harabayas, even if it's Harabayas, obviously if it's the Azara, you have an Isra Karis. So he's going to be asked about that. We'll talk about leading on the kotel. We'll talk about putting your fingers on the kotel. Very, very interesting as well. Putting notes in the kotel, would that be something that would be mutter? And our major discussion is going to be in different tshuvas, but a major question that was asked to the chief rabbis of Israel, and to me a very, very interesting piece in Chumim, where the chief rabbis of Israel and Rav Nevensal and Rav Menashe Klein and the chief rabbi of the Kotel and Kotel HaKadoshim, Rav Rubinowitz. So I was preparing this year when I was in Eretz Yisrael, and I actually saw him at the Kotel. And I wanted to ask him, because I was wondering why. I'll tell you what the question is. The question was, this goes back a number of years ago, there was actually pieces of the wall that started falling on people's heads, and they found out it was not coming from Arabs. It was coming from the fact that it was old. And they knew that it needed emergency repair. And the question was going to be, how exactly do we do this emergency repair la halacha? What do we have to require them to do? Once we're doing the repair, listen to this interesting thing, Rav Avadia Yosef was asked this question as well. Can we shave off the 3-week beard that's on the kotel, you know, all that growth that's coming out, is that mutter? Or are you going to say, no, that's part of harabayas? And he asked different rabbanim. He asked Rav Amar. Rav Rabinowitz has his own tshuva and his own beautiful sefer. Rav Menashe Klein. I wanted to ask him why Rav Menashe Klein. So anyway, I went up to him to ask him, and his bodyguards shrugged me away, so I wasn't able to ask him. I was right there in front of him, but you know, he was busy with some very important event that was going on at the hotel. But still, my question was more important. But okay. But we'll see that there are those that are machmir that say don't put notes in the kotel. Rav Nevinzal has a famous thing. I'll just tell you. We'll say it tomorrow one more time. Rav Nevinzal has this famous line. We used to have kiddush with Rav Nevinzal when we daven Vasikra on Shabbos, so you could ask him any question in the world. So he writes this. It's actually written in his one of his svarim, and they asked about putting notes in the kotel. So he said, "I don't understand why somebody wants to put a note in the kotel." He says, "You're there." He says, "What do you think? Hashem doesn't hear your voice?" See, he was very bothered why this became this minhag of writing notes in the kotel. Because he said, it's like almost a chutzpah. You know, he says, you know, imagine you need something from your parents, right? But you're embarrassed, you don't want to ask them. So you write them a letter. "Dear Mom and Dad, you're the best. Hope everything is amazing. Send money now." So if you want really the money, you're a good businessman, you call them. "How's everything? I think I need money." He says, "What are you writing notes in the kotel for? You're going up to the kotel. You need a refuah. You need this part else. You need this. So ask for it. What do you have to put a note in the kotel?" Okay, so obviously, parenthetically, just point out, sometimes the notes come from other people. Sometimes it's difficult for us to formulate it. I told you the Orach Chaim tells the story about the guy who went to the kotel with a note. By the way, the end of the story is that he's a very strange story, but it's in the introduction to the Orach Chaim. He started walking to the kotel, and all of a sudden it became exceedingly windy, like you wouldn't believe. And the wind is blowing and it's going crazy, and that. And the note flies away. And he can't find the note, and then strangely enough, it tells, and his shirt comes off. And he goes back to the Orach Chaim and he says, the note, can you write me another note to put in the kotel?" And he said, "No. If the note fell away, it was a sign from the Ribono Shel Olam, I can't help you anymore." So we see that the inyan of notes was an inyan. So tomorrow we'll have to discuss. Now that we've hopefully started our first part in defining that the kotel, almost according to everybody, has some sort of inherent kedusha to it. Again, there is a third possibility, which is, you know, lahavdil, but the possibility of the Jerusalem Post and Haaretz of saying there's no kedusha to it. It was built by a dad. So that's just, you know, inaccurate in the fact that the kedusha of Harabais was extended when Herod made this wall. It was much smaller. Harabais is not such a large place. But because of protection, the way that the Harabais went is that there was actually a ditch. And Herod built a wall to secure it. So there was kedusha that was extended to Harabais because of that. It was much more in. So I don't think Shita 3 is so accurate to go ahead and say, well, just let them have, you know, Wolf's and Zarts, whatever it's called, because there's no Kedusha to it. There is a Kedusha level. Whether it's only because of the fact that we've decided, again, the wall itself does not have inherent Kedusha. If it's the Kotel of Har Habayis, it just was a wall built by somebody else. You know, people kiss it and people do, you know, okay, great Gedolim, touch that wall. But, you know, you can't say something like, well, this is the wall that Shlomo HaMelech built. It's not true. So that's so far the frame that we've given. Mirtz Hashem, tomorrow we'll discuss some very, very practical tshuvas of how we act and what we can do and can't do when it comes to the Kotel HaMeravi.